This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
And welcome to Walden's Pond on this September 11, 2005, the fourth anniversary of the tragic events of September 11, 2001, the attacks on the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and the crash in Pennsylvania. I'm Shelton Walden, your host and producer of Walden's Pond. We're here every Sunday, 1 to 2 p.m. here on WBAI 99.5 FM. I'm grateful to be here with you here every Sunday at this time. This afternoon, we'll go back to the past a little bit. We'll be talking with a former program director here at WBAI. His name is Andrew Phillips. He was the program director here at WBAI for several years in the late 80s and early 90s. And now he has moved on to some very interesting ventures. He is the head of the Hancock Permaculture Center, based up in Hancock, New York. We'll be talking about his new ventures into the environment and how this can help save our planet, among other aspects of our lives. That and so much more on this edition of Walden's Pond. By all means, stay tuned. Mind if you wish to leave a note of information or comment, call us at 212-209-2984 off the air, 212-209-2984 off the air. You can email us at swalden@wbai.org, swalden@wbai.org. Also remember those tragic victims of the hurricane in Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and the entire Gulf Coast, Hurricane Katrina. Send your contributions to the charity of your choice. We'll be right back in a moment. Stay with us. Back with you here at 2 after the hour, 1 o'clock on this beautiful day, not unlike the day 4 years ago when those planes hit the World Trade Center, just a few blocks away here from WBAI Studios. Over 3,000 people were killed on that day, and our prayers and thoughts go out to those loved ones and the families of those loved ones. Of course, prayers go out to those people who are the victims of that terrible circumstance, act of nature in the Gulf Coast. Today, we have a special program, and we're going to get right to it very shortly. I had an opportunity to talk with a long interview and really a discussion with Andrew Phillips. He was the former program director here at WBAI Radio from 1989-1993, and he's a very distinguished and honored journalist. In his own right, he has produced a lot of radio documentaries for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. He's a native of Australia, the ABC there. He's also taught journalism at NYU. And a few years ago, he went into a garden business called Stone and Garden, a garden design and permaculture consulting service. And now he has really taken up the issue of permaculture. He's established the Hancock Permaculture Center based up in Hancock, New York, and is dedicated to the philosophy and the practice of permaculture in the Upper Delaware and Western Catskills bioregion. And I talked with him a little while ago and about all of that, and of course about the events of the hurricane and the events of 9/11. So hopefully you'll find the interview most interesting. I know I did. It was a pleasure talking with him. He's the most intelligent person and has rediscovered some aspects of life that he always, I guess, felt within him, and now has really nurtured within himself, and hopefully will help teach other people about the benefits of our environment through permaculture. So we talked with him about a week ago, and on this September 11th, 2005, hope you find this program informative. We're on WBAI in New York, and let's remember some of those victims of tragedies, both present and past. Andrew Phillips coming up here on WBAI.
the answers to rest your heart upon. But something happens, don't see it coming now. You can't stop yourself. Now you're
Walden's Pond, and back here to WBAI.
Well, thank you, Shelton, and this is a great program. It's been on WBAI a lot of years. You and I know that because I was originally here working here too. And
that's right. That's right.
And it's sometimes nice when I'm down in the city, which I often am, to tune in on a Sunday and hear the kind of positive information you're giving out and the critique of the health system, pharmaceuticals, organics, and I was very excited when you invited me to do this show.
Well, I'm excited to have you here. I'm excited about what you're doing. Again, as people who do may not know, who listen to BAI over the years, you were the program director here for many years, and award-winning documentarian on radio and I guess in some TV as well.
Some film.
And since you've left BAI, you've done a number of things, and just tell the audience a little bit about what you've been doing.
Well, yes, I worked in radio and journalism for over 20 years, coming from Australia originally to the United States in 1976 and to WBAI about the time of Three Mile Island, 1979.
Right.
And found this magnificent open airwave, this from the Empire State, transmitting out 60 miles. It was incredible that one could come down here and get on the air and share information and tapes. And I became a very keen documentary producer here for some years, back in the early, late 70s, as I said, about the time of the Three Mile Island accident.
Mm-hmm.
And, made a lot of documentaries, worked here also for Australian Broadcasting, both in television, travelling internationally for a program called Four Corners, a kind of, it's not really 60 Minutes. We like to think we were a little bit more documentary-driven than, than 60 Minutes is in a sense, a little bit slower perhaps. But we travelled a lot, particularly on the nuclear issue. I was out in the Four Corners area of this country.
Oh, yes.
Both for television and radio, covered a lot of the nuclear issue, Hiroshima countdown, the atomic bomb. I interviewed Paul Tibbetts and Charles Sweeney, the bomber pilots, and did a lot of stuff on the nuclear issue. And generally, my reporting was around areas of the environment with some... You can't do that without getting into politics as well, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I became program director here in 1989 mm-hmm. through 93.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw a lot of changes. We were able to start a regular morning show.
Right.
Amy Goodman on in the morning with Bernard.
That's right.
And Jose Santiago back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
We started Talk Back.
Right.
Malachi
McCourt. That's right.
Laura Seidel, she's now over on NPR.
Yeah,
and
that's
other
right.
people.
That's right.
It was great. It was a really significant part of my life. But, you know, I'm a traveler
mm-hmm.
in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved radio, but radio was... It was not a dying medium by any means. I've been listening to a lot of radio over this hurricane disaster situation. I haven't hardly seen any pictures. It's kind of interesting.
Mm.
But I'm just, both talk radio, ABC kind of stuff. ABC, American ABC kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And some BAI and Air America have been very interesting to hear the coverage. And very sad because just to transition, after having left... essentially WBAI and journalism, really, I found myself gardening. There's a film out now. Joe Hurley will probably review it, called The Constant Gardener.
Yes, with Ralph Fiennes.
With Ralph Fiennes.
Yes, sir.
I kind of feel like one of those characters, that Peter Sellers thing, Being There. Which he played that Being There. Was that the film
he did?
I kind of feel a little bit like that, a little bit. I became a gardener and specialising in stone, and just found that how amazing it was to be on the fringes of Manhattan, one of the largest, most powerful cities in the world, and to be gardening, actually. During the day out in Brooklyn, in those backyards, they're full of beautiful trees, quite a lot of bird life, and it's very peaceful. And it was a great meditation after BAI, I'll tell you that. And I didn't listen to the radio. I listened to the birds, and it was great. And then I got very interested in stone, and those little gardens can do nice things with a nice little stone patio. It's permanent. It's natural, looks nice, it's organically correct.
Yes.
We don't use hardly any cement or anything like that, drains naturally. So I got very interested in that, and in so doing, found myself up in the Catskills, in a rider truck, or a budget truck these days, bringing down skids of stone from the mountains, from about 150 miles up the northwest in the corner of Pennsylvania, where it hits New York State, actually at the where the east and west branch of the Delaware rivers meet, called the Wedding of the Waters, by the way.
Oh, okay.
The Wedding
okay.
of the Waters at
okay.
Delaware.
Okay, okay.
The town we live in is prosaically called Hancock.
Oh.
Not the Wedding of the Waters, which is a shame, but we think of it as the Wedding of the Waters. And I'd been a gardener. I'd been working about nearly eight, 9 years in Brooklyn backyards, and I sometimes felt a little bit like Walt Whitman, you know what I mean? I thought, I'm not the poet, but because when you're out there, you can imagine what those beautiful summer days, the light in Brooklyn,
yes.
which he wrote about.
Right.
You felt that. even today, even amongst 9/11, Manhattan,
yes.
you're still... The quality of the light and the garden and the cardinal and the squirrel,
right,
you know?
That's true.
And the people.
That's
and the
right.
enormous mix of people working in Brooklyn.
That's right.
So I became a real Brooklyn boy, you know. I drove a lot around, got to know where my supply lines were, and that's when I really grew up in America, I got to say. As a journalist, I loved being a journalist, but you're always telling somebody else's story. And it's been interesting, really, in a sense, creating your own story in a garden. And that really led me, Shelton, into permaculture, which, as you probably know, is an Australian-based idea, coincidentally, really invented about 30 years ago by a Tasmanian by the name of Bill Mollison. Now, he was an interesting character, is an interesting character. He's still alive in his 70s. He watched nature. He observed nature. Tasmania, as you may know, is a very beautiful part of the world, south of Australia.
Yes,
it's very rugged, very natural, quite glorious, and climatically very interesting also, and has a very appalling history relative to the Aborigines. They're entirely wiped out off of that island, which is a great disgrace, and a huge story. And the Tasmanian devil, quote unquote, a dog which kind of lived wild dog, it's also known for the Tasmanian devil.
Right.
But it's also known for Bill Mollison and permaculture.
Okay.
And he just observed, watched, and really developed this theory. He watched nature's patterns. He watched how nature worked in relative to the landscape, how rivers ran, how in fact if you look at a river from the air, it has the same kind of capillary kind of shape from its drainage area, from its headwater. If you watch all the smaller rivers becoming larger rivers, or the trickles becoming streams and becoming creeks,
exactly.
becoming rivers and becoming one of the largest rivers in the world. In this case, let's talk about the Mississippi, for instance.
Right.
A class two river, so-called in permaculture terms.
Okay.
If you look at those rivers from the air, they mimic the patterns of the capillaries in the blood system.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So he got... And if you look at the leaves, the veins in the leaf of a tree,
That's similarly.
He began to recognize these patterns and realized that they were constants, like the spiral you see in a seashell.
Yes.
And like the spiral you see in a hurricane.
Right.
Like the spiral you see in the universe.
Okay.
These constant patterns... And he began to look at them and essentially follow their language, if you like, their semiotics in a certain sense, how they expressed themselves in the environment. And in doing so, he called it permaculture, which he termed permaculture, permanent agriculture. That's what it's the idea is, a sort of a permanency in agriculture, because agriculture is where we grow our food, and it's so basic. And he coined this phrase, permaculture. And that was then joined, I should mention, by David Holmgren, another Australian, much younger and quite erudite, who became really like the factoid kind of guy. Whereas Bill was sort of the visionary raconteur, a great speaker, a great talker, and a great character. David was much quieter. Hence came permaculture. They wrote a few books. One became Permaculture 1 and has now become the Permaculture, the Designer's Manual. And he'd started to teach it. He set it up as a course. And keep in mind, he wasn't working with a university. He wasn't working with any sort of institution at all. Just out of this idea called permaculture. And he said, well, I think we need 72 hours of instruction, which is 2 weeks, 8 hours a day for 2 weeks. And he established this course, a permaculture designer certificate course. And I got real interested in all of this. I mean, through my gardening, Shelton. I'm going on a long time here. This is a long introduction.
Oh, please.
But I thought, whilst it's been very, you know, interesting and good exercise, I'll tell you that, building gardens and throwing rocks around Brooklyn and getting them up in Hancock, just to finish that story, because that's where the stone from the Empire State and the Statue of Liberty, or some of the stone, came from a lot of New York.
Empire State Building came from that?
A part of it, I understand,
really?
Yeah. So Hancock is called the Bluestone Capital of the World. America always has these.
Right.
It's the biggest in the world. Right. I don't know whether it is, but that's what it's called.
That's true. We always have these, like, this is where they all started.
Yeah.
Right here.
So I went up there to the quarries and the stone pickers, because a lot of the people up there, you know, there used to be dairy farms up there, and then the dairy farms moved elsewhere and became too expensive. So they picked the stones off the property and sell them and make quarries, and there's a lot of stone up there, still to this day. It used to be floated down the Delaware on big rafts, because it's also a big lumber area, also known for its lumber. They used to float the lumber on a raft and the stone on top and float it down to places like Deposit and Hancock on the river.
Okay.
And then
okay.
get it down to the city via trains in those days.
Okay.
So I became a bit of a country boy. I mean, I bought a little house in Hancock. It was reasonably priced. I said, why should I be paying $1,500 or $2,000 rent and a little storefront I had in Brooklyn?
Exactly.
When I can pay almost a quarter of that as a mortgage for a house in the country.
That's true.
Still got a roof, still got a bathroom, place to sleep, you
right,
know. What's the difference? It's 300 miles away there and back.
Right.
150
right.
there, 150 back.
Right, right.
But it sure was nice to get away. So I did that, and it was right near the quarries. And I called my little house, which I have a partner there, I called it the Hancock Permaculture Center. Because I really felt this is what I wanted to get involved with. I thought this is the next step for me as a journalist, as a producer. Interested in these issues. I wanted to be a doer.
Right.
Get my hands in the soil, literally, which
right.
I did.
Right.
And we started this thing called the Hancock Permaculture Center, and we're almost 2 years down the track now, and we're going to be having our first permaculture course in High Falls, New York, in the fall.
Okay.
And I can direct people to that. Perhaps I should give a website now in case people tune away, people will be interested, I'm sure, or hope they are. HancockPermaculture.org, HancockPermaculture.org will get you onto our website and you'll read all about it.
Okay.
We've got nice links and you'll read all about it. So I got into permaculture.
Okay.
And I'm in permaculture.
It's quite appropriate that we're having this conversation today because of all the things that are happening in Louisiana and Mississippi and Alabama and the southern part of the United States, which is at least in my lifetime, at least in this country, one of the most devastating things I've ever seen. Even, of course, just a few blocks from here, we had 9/11. But this, at least from a distance, is just is awesome in its human tragedy, the destruction of the environment, et cetera.
7 generations. The Native Americans talk about thinking out 7 generations.
Right.
And that's a pretty good starting point.
Right.
To think out 7 generations. Mm. Permaculture really thinks about that a lot and tries to implement and work with systems rather than against, work with systems. I started off talking about those natural patterns, to work with the patterns of the landscape, to work with the meaning of the stars, if you like, also, because people use the moon to plant by, to all of this, not just that. I mean, and it, but it's not actually that airy, it's not spacey kind of touchy-touchy, feely-feely, actually, permaculture. There's plenty of room for it.
Sure.
I'm not against it at all.
I hear you.
But it's very much into, for instance, water collection, water accumulation. I mean, we could talk about the Mississippi. It's interesting. I mean, I did my course, Sheldon, in New Orleans about this time last year when Hurricane Ivan was flying in from the Gulf. Our teacher was Jeff Lawton, actually an Englishman who'd come out from England as a surfer looking for a good wave in Australia. He sure found one. He found permaculture. He learned about Bill Mollison. He said, this is interesting. He loved his waves. But he finished up in Tasmania and did a course with Bill and loved it and stuck around, learned a lot, and how he'd become one of the finest teachers in the world. He's been teaching for more than 20 years.
Wow.
And he was my teacher. An aside with Jeff Lawton, he did a permaculture project out in the desert in Jordan.
Okay.
About 2 kilometres from where Jesus Christ was christened.
Okay.
In the Dead Sea.
Wow.
Also below sea level.
Oh, okay.
Sand, nothing there.
Hot conditions, I'm sure.
Very hot conditions and cold at night. Right. Extreme conditions.
Right.
And not many what they call rain events. I mean, when it does rain, there's a lot of it for a very short time, and then it disappears. So what permaculture says is capture the rain. Don't let the rain run off the soil so quickly. Establish ways to capture it and keep it for a longer period of time. The longer you keep it, the more chance it, because it's water, it's H2O, it's life.
Right.
You know, don't forget we're 70-80% that ourselves.
Absolutely. 3/4 of water, absolutely.
Yeah. I need a glass of water.
You need a glass of water?
That's right. Yeah, probably. Anyway, but that's it. It's water's life.
Right.
So don't waste it.
That's right.
I mean, here we are. We talk about gasoline going up, which is pretty. I just delivered a lot of stone today in a big truck. It cost me $40 in gas just running around Brooklyn. You know, but it's still going to the shop and buying a bottle of water. It's still probably more expensive to buy a gallon of water in one of those stores than it is to buy a gallon of gasoline.
What's the, in your mind, what's the difference between permaculture and, you know, over the last 20, 30 years, we've had this whole movement around organic farming, organic culture. Does that conflate with that, or is it different from that?
It's part of the same thing, but I think permaculture, of course, uses organic methods. Composting is organic composting is a very important part of permaculture. Soil creation is a very important part of permaculture, organically creating soil, because the healthier your soil is and the more natural it is, the less disease and the less bugs it's going to, because weeds like funky ground. Weeds don't like rich soil, they don't grow. They like very hard, nasty soil. That's why they'll even grow out of the concrete, you know.
Okay.
Weeds like that, but if your soil is in very good condition, as it can be with composting properly, organically, you're going to get less weeds, you're going to get better soil, you're going to build soil, it becomes more spongy, it absorbs the water, and you're starting a natural system in the same way as you would get at the bottom of a forest floor, which is spongy and soft and absorbs water. I mean, when a river's running, at least 15 times that amount of water is stored in the banks, is stored in the soil. If the ecology is there, if the moss is there, if the plant life is there, if the humus is there, to act as that sponge. And that's been one of the problems with the Mississippi, because all that runoff can happen too quickly, although this was a different situation. I mean, there was serious flooding up in the Hancock Catskills area when Ivan came through. And we had the worst floods that they've had up there in 50 years. And I also heard in 100 years, because there was another one a couple of months later, which also flooded very, very much the area. Of course, caused also by climate change, but also caused by the way we use the landscape, the runoff getting, the water getting off the landscape too quickly into the water, into the river. And of course, building the roads in the wrong places and interrupting the natural flow of the landscape. We talk about patterns, you know.
About a year and a half ago, I interviewed a gentleman who wrote a book called Bayou Farewell. His name was Mike Titwell. And he in some ways predicted some of this, what happened. If a hurricane hit, this was going to happen because of the lack of planning that the people had in that area. In reading some of the literature about permaculture, you talk about how we're losing a lot of our soil because of the agricultural practices we have. Would permaculture have helped some of the unbelievable damage that that occurred in that area?
In the Mississippi?
Yeah, and particularly in the Delta region.
Yes.
In
that area.
But Mississippi.
The Gulf area.
The Gulf area, yeah.
Well, let's think about what a delta is. I mean, a river delta, it's a place of accumulated silt from the river, mm-hmm. which actually builds soil.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if the Mississippi, if we had have applied, or if we, let's be positive, let's say if we do apply permaculture principles to the Mississippi, if one did, mm-hmm. You wouldn't start at the bottom, you'd start at the top. It's the top of the watershed. The Mississippi drains about two-thirds of the United States. It's an order two river, it's one of the largest rivers.
Mm-hmm.
And drains the Ohio Valley area.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all know in our history about that. This isn't the TVA per se, but the TVA does the same thing over in those seven states.
Right.
We put up the dams, we divert the water. Agriculturally, we've got a lot of pollutants floating into the water. We've got all that. That's a whole other thing, of course.
Mm-hmm.
We change the shape of the landscape, but not following the natural patterns. And therefore, when we get these flood events, these huge rains, in this case, this catastrophic storm, we're going against it. We're not. If you're going to sail a boat, you can't sail into the wind. You've got to sail off the wind.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to use the power of the wind to move yourself forward.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the same way, you've got to follow the patterns of nature. If you start to put up these levees and create a lot of straight lines, you're going to have problems down the road. People knew this, as you said, your guest some years ago predicted it. Well, when I was in New Orleans, when Hurricane Ivan was coming in, and we started to ask questions locally, we said, well, what does this mean? Because we looked up, and here's the levee like 8 feet above us. We were down below that.
Wow.
And I looked around, I said, wait a minute, there's nowhere to go here.
Right.
The trees aren't that tall. I mean, and the people are poor, little houses,
sure.
You know. And we weren't in a strictly African-American neighborhood. We were at West We Go, which is West We Go. It's called West We Go, west of the Mississippi. West We Go, became known as West We Go.
Mm-hmm.
About 15 miles from downtown, from the French Quarter. But we knew this was going to be disastrous. And when Mayor Negrin came on, he was there when I was there, there was an evacuation then too, and that was mandatory. Then it was mandatory, but the media were reporting, and I recorded this off of my little video camera off of TV. They said that at least 100,000 people couldn't get out. The homeless, of course, the infirmed. You know, there's a lot of poverty down there. There's
yes.
no way out. And even if you did have a car and you could get out, the highways were blocked because that time they didn't have what they call a counterflow or something, where you open up the entire highway and everyone goes
one direction.
One
that's
direction.
Right.
They still had one side empty and one side bumper to bumper.
Unbelievable.
Which was unbelievable. And they said then they're flying in the body bags, and they were asking people, cop this, they were asking people to go to the police station to register their identification marks.
Mm.
And this was on TV.
Wow.
It was that blatant.
Wow.
And we said to ourselves, you know, this is crazy, you know, because there is a hurricane. In this case, the hurricane was coming in. It's blowing in at like 160 miles an hour, mm. Category 5.
Mm.
30-foot waves, which just a few weeks ago, by the way, they measured, they took the readings off of the ocean floor, and there was a report that some of those waves were 90 feet high.
Good
out
Lord.
In the Gulf.
Good Lord.
90 feet high in the Gulf when it was at its max. That's a big wave. That's an 8-10-story building.
That's huge. That's tsunami level.
Now, we didn't get that. So let's talk about the Mississippi. I mean, I said, what's going to happen? Well, this big hurricane's going to come in. It's going to spin in from the ocean, picking up all that warm water because of global warming. We know that's happening. It's getting hotter, and it acts as a more powerful generator for the hurricane. And it's going to spin in around the back of New Orleans, where Lake Pontchartrain is located. Now, get a sense of the size of it. The bridge across it is it a bridge? Whatever your causeway is, 20 miles long.
Right, the Lake Pontchartrain.
From Mississippi, right. Coming in from...
Lake Pontchartrain.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Coming in from the Mississippi side, because right. we drive across that. Coming in from...
That's a marvelous engineering feat to...
It is marvelous to look at it. Yeah. Gee, look at that. But look how quickly nature knocked it down.
Right.
I mean, in a certain sense, I mean, what permaculture does... A colleague of mine, who we're teaching on the course, by the way, upstate, co-teaching with Lawton. I mean, this is a bit of a promo for our course, folks, let's face it. we'd like to get some people there. We think it's interesting. If not this one, but just